Hi, welcome to the Microsoft Virtual Academy live Q&A. My name is Jaime Rodriguez. I'm a Windows 8 evangelist. And today our guest is Charles Petzold, programming legend and great book author. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Charles, programming Windows 6 edition, 13 years or 14 years after you did the 5th edition, what made you write another book?
Well, I wrote the 5th edition, I guess it was published in 1999. And it was focused on Windows 98. And I thought at that time that I pretty much said everything I wanted to say about the Win32 API and C programming. And a year after that, I guess the year 2000, I started looking at .NET and C Sharp. And at first it was Windows Forms, and then with the Windows Presentation Foundation and XAML. And I grew to love C Sharp. C Sharp is still my all-time favorite programming language. And I moved away from the API. I didn't do any API, Windows API programming for a good decade. But then, Windows 8. And all the rules had been rewritten. And Windows 8 allowed me to write for the Windows API using C Sharp and XAML, which were my favorite tools. So I felt it was time. The Windows had been revolutionized. It was the obviously the biggest change to Windows since the initial release. And it was time to get programming Windows out of retirement and have a new edition.
Okay. Well, I have to tell you, I enjoyed the book.
Thank you.
Like every other book, I think I've read at least 4 out of your 6. And so, great book and, you know, very, very helpful to people.
Thank you.
So, this is a live Q&A, so I do want to remind the audience to please submit your questions online. We're reading them here. I have a few lined up, and so please submit them. Be patient. We'll get to your questions as soon as we can. C Sharp, Sam, you just said, and there's a question that comes from, you know, from the audience, but you said C Sharp is your favorite programming language.
Yes.
There's a question here that actually just says C Sharp or C++. So I have to put you there.
It was interesting. When we first started talking about this book, meaning me and Microsoft Press started talking about this book, and we went public with this book very early. And so we got a lot of feedback from potential readers, and I had a couple of very interesting discussions on my blog about what language the book would use. And for a lot of the traditionalists, the people who grew up with programming Windows, the first 5 editions, which are all about C, they thought this book should be C++. Instead, I thought that it should be a more modern language, namely C Sharp. Since it was my decision, I made the decision that this book would be about C Sharp. And in a sense, definitely I think it was the right decision. I think that if you examine where the Windows runtime API came from, that C Sharp is a more natural language for coding applications for Windows 8. I was and am still a firm believer in managed code, and again, that's C Sharp. I think there are aspects of C Sharp that make it ideal for programmers who wish to code something quickly and be assured that it's running right. There are certain bugs that are simply impossible in C Sharp. And C Sharp also allows, gives operating systems a fighting chance to run applications in a sandbox and make sure that they're not going to ruin your machine. So there's a lot of things about C Sharp and C Sharp in as a application language that I like a lot. On the other hand, Windows 8 did something very interesting with regard to programming languages, unlike .NET. Of course, with .NET, you could also program in C++, except that C++ was made into a managed language. So it was basically, there was not a whole lot of difference between coding a .NET app in C++ and coding it in C#, except for the language syntax. And both languages were managed, and they would both have about the same performance. But with Windows 8, they didn't do that. C++ in Windows 8 is an unmanaged language. And so you get the performance benefits of C++. So there really is a significant trade-off between the two languages. And I came to realize, it wasn't so obvious to me at the beginning, but I came to realize that for performance critical applications, particularly those that use that are going to be doing graphics or audio and DirectX stuff, that you're going to want to do it in C++, because you're going to want that efficiency.
Yep. So that's a great point. With WinRT, you know, we do have a language projection where it makes it seamless to go back and forth. And you mentioned DirectX, so I have to use that as the excuse to plug in your column in MSDN.
Yes, since January, my column for MSDN magazine is called DirectX Factor, and I am doing specifically Windows 8 programming with DirectX using C++. And the first half dozen columns are about the part of DirectX called X Audio 2, which is high performance audio. And this is making electronic music is what really got me into computers in a big way. Back in the 70s, I started putting together electronic music instruments. There's a little essay about all this on my website. But I've always, since then, looked at how the API supports making electronic music. There's some electronic music stuff in the fifth edition of Programming Windows. And I did some stuff with electronic music in Silverlight on my blog. And I did a little for Windows Phone in the pages of MSDN Magazine. But with Windows 8, we have this X Audio 2 API, which allows you to get your app to get very much involved in generating sounds and modifying sounds. And it is extremely high performance. It is amazing. I have not managed to overload that thing yet. I'm just very impressed by it. Of course, being DirectX, it's not that easy to code for, and it's one of the challenges. It's kind of, I know it must seem kind of peculiar that after finishing this book, which is entirely C# and XAML, except for one chapter where I do a little C++. It looks like I'm jumping ship now. I'm going into the C++ camp and doing DirectX programming. To me, it makes perfect sense. I had been doing C# and XAML programming for about almost 10 years, I think, starting with the beta version of Windows Presentation Foundation, and then Silverlight, and then Windows Phone 7, and then Windows 8. And I think I wanted to give myself another challenge. And DirectX is a challenge. It's one of the more difficult things I've done in recent years. And I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yep, I can tell. It's fun. DirectX is a lot of fun. And that's the beauty of Windows, say, that, you know, true projections, you can code against anything and seamlessly integrate, which is a great thing to have.
Yeah, it's Windows 8 really... In one sense, elevated DirectX when you're writing a Windows 8 app, you can be assured that there is a certain version of DirectX present, and it's part of the Windows API at this point.
Yep. So, great. Let me take some questions for the audience to make sure that we're keeping up with them.
Okay.
So This one, I don't think it's a really great question, but it's actually a great point. Somebody asked about writing secure code. Which is not in your book. But,
yeah.
You know, one thing that I would definitely say is MS Press has a really great book on writing secure code. So to whoever asked that question, I would highly recommend that you look at the MS Press Writing Secure Code book.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. There's a number of topics that, you know, obviously I don't know everything, so.
Yep. So there's one here. What should I tell my fellow programmers that come from Win32 about this new platform? And I'm going to, you know, editorialize a little bit and say, in particular, SAML, to a lot of people, SAML's still new. So
oh, yeah.
I'd like for you to tell.
It's going to be a big jump for the Win32 programmers. But, you know, programmers have gone through these kind of jumps before. Some of us can remember about the early 90s, around 1990 or so, when a lot of programmers started realizing that Windows was here to stay, and that they weren't going to be writing assembly language programs for DOS anymore. They were going to be writing for the what was then the Windows API using C. And it was an enormous change in perspective. And I think this is just as significant, the Windows UI is changing. The API is changing too. Maybe there are people who would be happy coding for message loops and messages and GDI for the rest of their lives. But these things change.
Yep. So great.
The only constant is change, as they say.
Yeah, that's definitely when you're a programmer, that's the case, right? That's what we strive for anyway. Somebody asked from your early conversation, do you think that C# will overtake C++ in what is the gaming SDK future, DirectX or XNA?
There's certainly I think we're seeing more interest in C# than C++ for writing Windows 8 apps. I don't know. Do you have a relative? Do you know? Have an understanding of how these relatively balance out? And
no.
Of course, HTML and JavaScript as well is another option.
So, and I know this will be hard to believe, but the data shows it up. We're actually seeing a pretty good balance.
Really?
Like we see a good number. We see a lot of C# apps, probably because your book was one of the first. So we had a lot of .NET developers who jumped into the application model quickly. We're seeing a good number of HTML apps, and we're definitely seeing what you're alluding to on your column, which is when people want to write these immersive games, these really great, you know, high performance, we're seeing a lot of DirectX and C++.
Right.
So I think on that side, you know, there's a little bit for everybody. Whatever, there's the right tool for the right job.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we have all the tools that we need.
Yeah.
Some of them are definitely a little bit more of a learning curve than others. But, you know, starting with the right tool, picking C++ and DirectX can definitely get you over certain scenarios that you would never be able to accomplish otherwise.
I think for most mainstream applications, C# is a preferable language to C++. But you alluded to XNA, and one of my past books was on the 3D stuff you could do in Windows Presentation Foundation, and so there have been a couple attempts in the past to give managed programmers and C# programmers the ability to work with 3D graphics. And the WPF 3D was one of them, and XNA was another. And I got into XNA because it was part of the Windows Phone 7 API. I guess my Windows Phone 7 book is maybe two-thirds C# and XAML and one-third XNA, because I enjoyed XNA. That was a lot of fun. But that stuff is being de-emphasized. And instead, what's the philosophy with Windows 8 is that if you want to do DirectX and 3D, you're doing it in C++. Now, there are wrappers around DirectX where you can use it from a managed language. But I think in one sense, this approach is more realistic, because if you're writing a 3D app, you're not only do you need high performance within the operating system, you're going to need high performance within the app code itself. And so perhaps by putting a big managed code wrapper around this 3D graphics, and whether it's being done in XAML or whether it's XNA, maybe that's not realistic.
Yep.
Maybe you just want, it's better to just bite the bullet and do it in C++, because that will give you the best performance.
Yep. There's a tool for everything, is the way I think about it. And one thing that I do want to remind our viewers is that with Windows 8, we run on ARM, and those devices tend to have a little bit less power. We care a lot about the battery. So so on that side, we wanted to do, we want to watch a little bit more, and that's where C++ can be stronger for you.
Yeah.
So it can provide some benefits that, you would get if you skip that extra layer.
And it is. It's one of the funnest things about doing DirectX programming is that eventually you run these programs on the ARM processor, and they run. There's a whole the DirectX is right on there.
Yep. I love it. Developers always, sometimes I email some developer and I'm like, oh, I was running it on ARM and they haven't even tested it, and they're like, oh, how does it run?
Yeah.
So it's a great story to be able to tell people, hey, with Windows 8, we have that. So somebody asked here, is there a way to create extended desktop apps with the new Windows Store application model and everything that's in your book?
Extended desktop apps.
Desktop apps. So I assume they mean just regular desktop apps.
Yeah. Well, if there is a way to do a desktop app using C# and XAML, and that's WPF or Silverlight out of browser. My understanding is that there is no real connection here. Either you're writing a desktop app or you're writing a Windows Store app.
Yeah, that's right. So
maybe somebody has found some magic kind of glue there, but it really, writing a Windows Store app is just making that commitment to write the Windows Store app and put the other stuff aside. Of course, it still has a role.
Yep. But you nail it, right? You can do WPF on the desktop.
Oh yeah.
Or you can do XAML and C#, same skills, same tools.
Yeah, if you're doing like a Silverlight out of browser app, your XAML and code it depends what you're doing. It might be quite similar to the Windows 8. Then again, it might not. There's a lot of even though Windows 8, the Windows runtime, was in parts bear a good resemblance to Silverlight, there's some stuff that's very different in there, obviously.
What do you do? That's something I wonder. What do you do when you write this book, having written WPF, then phone? Do you start from scratch? Do you take everything and question everything?
Yeah. You have to. You can't make any assumptions. You have to test everything. Sometimes when writing a book, I'll spend an hour to make one declarative sentence. And it's just one of the things you have to do. It's been a fun little road of these different XAML-based environments. At one point, we were kind of hoping as developers that there would be one consistent XAML-based API that would be the desktop apps and web apps and phone apps and tablet apps. We may be getting closer to that.
Yep.
I don't know. Every time we seem to be getting closer to that, we don't quite make it. It may be that this idea is going to remain an elusive one, that it's just we will never get to a point where we have one API for all the devices, and the API will never change after that. It'll be the perfect API, and it'll be good for the decades and decades to come.
Well, we had Win32, and I think SAML and C# are probably, the way I think of Win32 served us for 20 years. I think SAML and C# are going to serve us the next 20 years. So you're right that there's a little bit of glitches every now and then as you go to phone or everything else, but overall it's as close as we've gotten in the last 10 years.
Well, one of the things I really liked about Windows 8, the Windows Runtime API, that's different from WPF and Silverlight, and even Windows Phone 7, was treating mouse and touch and pen in a unified way. Because we started out with mouse-based environments, and then pen stuff was added, stylus stuff, and then touch stuff was added on top of that. But with Windows 8, they really took a step back, and they said, you know, these three types of pointing devices should really be handled in much the same way. And so, and it's happened. And we have, instead of having mouse events, we have these things called pointer events. And the pointer events are whatever. It could be a mouse, it could be fingers, it could be a pen. And we treat all these things in the same way now. And of course you can, if you need to do processing that's specific to one of these devices, you can figure out what device is generating the events. But I think that's a big step forward, and I love it. It means that, you know, you could be thinking of your app as a mouse-based app, but once you're done coding it, it works with touch and it works with a pen. Or you could be doing a touch-based app, and it'll work with a mouse to a certain extent. You know, just that, you know, you have 10 fingers but only one mouse. But yeah. And I think that's great. I think that's one of my favorite parts about the Windows 8 API.
Yeah, it makes it easier to think about that and to think about the different form factors. Small screen, big screens is something that we do some work there.
Yeah.
So let's take a question for the audience. This one, I come from the OpenGL background. I'm yet to learn DirectX. You know, how many things to learn is what the question says. To reword it a little bit.
We can't. There's. It used to be that you could be a DOS programmer and know pretty much everything, and you could be an early Windows programmer and know pretty much everything. That's not the case now. I've never done any OpenGL programming, and I know people who are quite fond of it, but I never did any, so I'm not even sure what it looks like. I myself have to pick and choose what I learn about. And some people like to have a little knowledge about everything. I'm more of a specialist. It's just the way I think. I like to focus and get deep into it. So there's a lot of stuff I don't know,
yep.
And OpenGL is one of them.
Yep.
But it's one of those things that seems to be de-emphasized in the Windows programming area. And what eventually happens to DirectX, I don't know. It could be that we'll be coding for something different in a few years. Somebody will come up with a better way to do graphics than this COM-based API that we're dealing with.
I think Microsoft is pretty sold on DirectX for another 20 years.
I think as far as the performance goes, the API could be a little.
It's a lower level language because it needs that level of performance. But well, we're committed. And to somebody that knows OpenGL, I'm not an expert, but I can tell you that it's the exact same concept. So if you know the graphics concept in OpenGL, shaders, all those things, you're going to see the exact same concept. So it's not hard to move. We have a lot of people that are porting their apps from iOS or from other platforms, and they're taking them from OpenGL then direct to DirectX. And you know, it's a little bit of work, but it's the exact same concept. You're coding to a C or C++-like language, so you'll be very, very familiar. Nothing to be scared of. And you should ping Charles and have him write some comments on the topic so he can learn a little bit and give you a little bit of advice on how to move towards DirectX.
I've done 3D programming in WPF and in XNA and in DirectX in that order, which is kind of a backwards order to go, I guess. There's some basic concepts that transcend the particular implementation.
Yep, exactly. It's always vertices and it's always triangles. that's the one thing I still remember from college. So there's a question here, and this one I can take because it's a little off, but I want to make sure that we're answering. And again, to the people in the audience, keep up or be patient with us as we'll get to your questions. Any rumors about serial COM support in WinRT? And today we're not commenting on anything that's Windows or next version of Windows, so there's no rumors. But devices is obviously something we're constantly looking at, and we'll make sure that we have all the functionality that you need from your Windows Store apps. So on that side, there's nothing we can confirm or deny on that rumor. But I wanted to make sure that I addressed it so that the person didn't feel like they're asking questions. And anybody else that's asking questions, again, just be patient with us. We'll get to them as we go. So there's a question here, and I think we've touched on it a little bit already, this whole universal SAML. But the person asks, moving from WPF to SAML, and it just says easy or hard. So you don't have to go into very deep length. You can just get out with a quick answer, or you can get into detail.
I was a big fan of WPF, and I wished I could have programmed for it indefinitely. And it really, there is stuff that in WPF that. As Silverlight was being developed, Silverlight, of course, took some of these WPF concepts, and it seemed like it was taking more and more as time went on, and then it kind of stopped. And then Silverlight was a big influence on Windows Phone 7, and then both of them an influence on Windows RT, the WinRT API. But there is stuff in WPF I still miss, and pull one off the top of my head. There is properties of elements in WPF called render transform and layout transform, and these are graphics transforms that you set to traditional translate transform, scale transform, rotate transform, skew transform to change the object. In WPF, you could either set this thing to the render transform property, in which case it changed the appearance, the rendering of the object, but not how the object is recognized in layout.
Yep.
And then there was a layout transform that was affected layout. It was the transformed object. For example, say you want to, you have a text string and you want to rotate it 90 degrees. You could do that either by a render transform or a layout transform. But if you wanted it to be part of the layout in the rotated way, you have to do it in a layout as a layout transform. And so that concept. Today we have only the render transform in Silverlight and Windows Phone and WinRT. We have only the render transform and not the layout transform. And I miss the layout transform. There's times when I really, really need it.
Yep. So send an email to Microsoft. Design change request.
Yeah. There's also a lot more customability in WPF. You can make your own markup extensions, for example. You can derive from framework element and draw yourself. You can't derive from framework element in all the XAML-based stuff that's come since then. So there's certainly less to learn.
Yep, and that's actually, you nail it with regards to some of the motivation. When I ask the product team people, what about layout transform? What about triggers? What about certain things
that
haven't made it? Those are good examples. Trigger is a pretty good example of something that everybody told us was too hard. And then we moved to a Visual State Manager model.
Which to me became harder. I like triggers. Triggers seem very natural to me, and the Visual State Managers seem like a little too much overhead for my taste.
So it's the guy that wrote the tool versus the guy that wrote the book versus the guy that writes the tool, right? That's the trade-off. I'm 100% with you that I used to be a master at triggers, and when I look at Visual State, I see some of the but I don't know how to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
In parallel, I can tell you as a teacher or as a person that trains a lot of people, it's much easier for me to explain them Visual State Management than to explain them everything with triggers.
Okay.
So those are the trade-offs that happen every day.
Okay.
Of course. Question from the audience. Let me read it straight up because it's a long one. Which would be the best way or the recommended way for a unified approach for all devices for a wide array of languages? In parentheses, this is, would you use SAML for all devices, or would you use JavaScript and HTML? You use SAML on phone.
Yeah.
You wrote the book.
Yeah, you can do XAML on phone and a desktop app and a Windows 8 app and a Silverlight app. That seems to me a little more versatile than the HTML and JavaScript approach. I never really got into JavaScript much. The language is a little too loose for my taste. And HTML is a little too loose for my taste as well.
Yep.
I was always more of a client-side programmer rather than a web programmer. So it's just my prejudices. But in one sense, you could really make an argument that the world is going towards an HTML and JavaScript approach for a wide variety of things. If it really fulfills some of the promises that we've heard about HTML5, then we might be looking at a future where everything is web-based.
Well, in Windows, we have the luxury that we allow you to code in HTML.
Yeah.
And when you code in HTML, you have seamless access to WinRT, so we give you a very rich programming model underneath. And you can actually interact with C#, like create a WinRT component. So we give you the best of all the worlds. As long as you know what tool to use and when to use it, you do have that luxury. That doesn't go across every platform. But on Windows, we give you best performance because we're hardware accelerated, and we give you a very seamless integration with the OS. So we have a good model there. But I'm with you there that HTML across every possible platform is still something that might be a little towards the future. But it's definitely something everybody keeps an eye on, and it's Microsoft is very committed to HTML.
Yeah.
To make sure that we're doing as best as we can with regards to web standards on all platforms, whether it's the browser or our Windows 8, and eventually all of those will carry to Windows Phone. So, here's a question from the audience again: which chapter took the longest to write in your sixth edition? I'm assuming it's in your sixth edition.
Gosh. Somehow the page navigation chapter comes to mind as something that gave me a particular amount of trouble because of saving application state and saving page state. And there's When a Windows 8 app is suspended, it should save its application state, because if it's suspended, it could be terminated. And the app will never be notified that it's actually being terminated, but it's notified that it's being suspended. So it saves the application state, so the next time it comes up, it looks the same and it's on the same page. And it turned out to be a little tricky. There are templates, Visual Studio templates, that have some classes that help you do this for you. But I preferred kind of rolling my own, and I realized why those classes were there for programmers. That one was hard. There was also, I spent a lot of time with the chapter on touch, and I got into this thing where I have a finger paint program, and it starts out very simple. It just tracks your fingers and draws lines on the screen. But if you're using a pen, and quite possibly some touchscreens are responsive to pressure. So you want to draw thicker and thinner lines as the pressure changes. And that works pretty good, except that if you start looking at those lines, you see that they jump up and down in discrete steps because of the way you're doing it. You're doing each of the pieces of the line at a particular width depending upon the pressure. And I thought, well, can I kind of go from one to the other? And it was a matter of, in the general case, having two circles of different radii and connecting them up with tangent lines to both. And the math was a little tricky. But once I got it nailed, I was very proud of that. And it's one of the things that's in my book that you're not going to find in another Windows 8 book, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, both. And to be fair, or since you brought it up, you mentioned navigation took you the longest, and I think it's one of the better chapters because...
Oh, thank you.
I like it when people understand how something works, as opposed to like people that just say, oh, I'm going to use a template,
yeah.
And then they get stuck three steps later. So I definitely, like, that's one that I always recommend people. You have to go read and understand the basics. I remember the touch example, too, that I thought, oh, this is pretty neat. And I've seen, I think I've probably seen every one of your books has a touch sample. So I know you're passionate on the topic.
I love touch. I love graphics, too. And so the integration of touch and graphics is quite fun.
Yep. So hang on 1 second. I have a note here. I have a lot of questions. I'm not seeing. Oh, yeah. Questions from Teams Neath, that I was called that here. Can you talk about the approach you take to learning a new platform yourself?
Wow. I tried to do it in a very methodical way. One of the things I almost always do is a program that'll do a class hierarchy. And with XAML-based environments, you can begin the class hierarchy at dependency object and see what descends from that. And then all the major pieces of that start analyzing what classes define what properties and events, how the thing is built up through the class hierarchy. That's one of the things that helps me get a bigger picture on the platform. There's a lot of different ways I do these things. Sometimes I will come up with a sample program first. How do I do this? And then it's a matter of digging into the API to find what's available. I tend to try to get an understanding of the hierarchy of namespaces. Mm-hmm. What the major group of namespaces are devoted to. Back in the back in the early days of Windows, back in the Windows 1.0 technical reference was not alphabetical order. All the functions were ordered by category, and I thought that was a great way to learn it, because you could say, I want to know about the clipboard, and so there was a category of clipboard functions, and you could learn those. But now everything's alphabetical, and you lose that. So the namespace kind of helps by consolidating similar stuff. But one of the big pieces of WinRT that was different from previous XAML-based environments was all the file and stream stuff. The namespaces beginning with Windows.storage. And for those, it was a matter of methodically going through those namespaces and picking out, finding what were the major the classes, the really important ones, and again how they related to each other. It's a lot of research, and a lot of it is I write programs that explore as well. That some of them actually end up in the book, and some of them do not. This book has a class hierarchy program that I still run a lot, because to me the class hierarchy of starting with dependency object tells you, if you understand that, it tells you a real lot about the structure of the API.
Yep, it's definitely very useful for teaching people. So the audience is listening, so they tripped you on this one. I want you to answer this one. You said you didn't like JavaScript, or you said JavaScript was a little bit loose.
I said
it was loose.
Yeah, okay.
But then they said, so what is your opinion of dynamic languages and Lambda expressions?
Yeah.
And the dynamic keyword in C#. So they're paying attention. So
I haven't done much with dynamic languages or the dynamic keyword. I had Lambda expressions are fine though. I like those. Those are very handy.
Okay.
Perfect. We do a lot of lambdas in the C++ async stuff. That was another thing in C#. Of course, we have this great await the keyword that makes async programming probably a little too easy. It makes it so it looks like regular procedural code, and maybe you lose sight of what's really going on there. C++ is a little more challenging in that respect, there's a lot of lambdas involved and some tricky syntax. Because one of the things I did with this book, even though I was certain I was going to do all the code in C#. And then we were tossing around the idea of maybe I'll convert all the code to C++. And I hadn't really decided to do this. In fact, I had decided against it. And my editor said, I've already tweeted that you're going to be converting all the code to C++. And I guess, if it's been publicly tweeted, I got to do it. And that turned out to be a hard job in some areas. But I learned a lot. Yeah. I learned a lot. And eventually got to the point where, I can manage to do this in C++ too. And might as well start doing some DirectX coding, because I wanted to do some DirectX for a long time. And this is the time to do it.
So let me make sure I got that right. Are all your samples available in C++? Because I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you download the code samples, they've all been converted to C++. With the exception of two programs I wasn't quite able to finish in time. There's two programs that I didn't get converted. And I think both of them involve a situation where you need to do sequential async calls in a for loop. Which is easy in C#, and with C++ though it's kind of messy, and I wasn't there's you can't really do it directly with the tools that you have. It's one of those things I'm going to be exploring a little more in the future, because I really should learn how to do that.
So we have a parallel programming library for
The PPL. It's PPL. But it's based around a template class called Task.
Yep.
And constructing continuations. In appearance, it looks more like the JavaScript approach of promises. But there's nothing quite like that C# await keyword. Man, that is a stroke of brilliance.
Yep. Charles, do you have a Twitter account?
I do not. I'm on my social networking is confined to, I do a blog. And Facebook. I'm on Facebook. And I'll befriend anybody.
Okay.
Just send me a friend request and it'll... And then you get to hear about my, you know, politics and what I'm... concerts that I go to and stuff like that. If you're ready for that stuff.
Yep. There's a question here. I can take this to give you a break. So I need to write a program with a database backend. I'm currently using SQLite for my database. What other options are there?
Yeah.
I know this is a little bit off topic for the book, but you know, you can. So local database SQLite is your best option for Windows Store apps. For any, if you want to connect to the cloud, then for example, any web server, any API that you can reach through our web servers, I would have said Azure. We have really great support with Azure Mobile Services. We have, you know, structured storage on the cloud that you can connect to very easily. So I just, you know, I threw that out there for the right people. Next question is, command binding is missing in phone and Windows 8 for SAML controls.
That's not true.
So, yeah, I figure it was.
Yeah, there's the button base class implements a command property of type iCommand.
Yep.
And a command parameters. And I have an example in the book of doing a command delegate class. And I have a chapter in this book. For the first time, I have a chapter on MVVM. Yep. It's a short chapter.
Yep.
And it's not something that I think belongs in an API book, but I did it specifically because of that that command the commanding thing. So I have a keypad code example that has a numeric keypad in XAML and a view model that handles the commands and the computations and nothing in the code behind file. So it's an MVVM app that uses commands, and it's possible to do it in Windows 8.
Yep. So command is definitely there. Command is in button, and other elements have commands. So to whoever asked the question, unless I misread it or misinterpreted it, it's definitely there, and I definitely have a call out for your MVVM chapter, which was kind of a surprise to me.
It was a surprise to me, too, that I found myself writing it.
The sample is great. It's easy to explain. It's, you know, it's great for people that are trying to learn.
You know, there's a practical reason why I don't do some of this stuff. It's I like my code examples to be small. Once you convert a piece of small code to MVVM, it gets much bigger. MVVM makes much more sense for bigger apps rather than tiny apps, but I felt it was important to show these concepts.
Yep. There's a comment here, and I second this. Somebody says they love your annotated Turing book.
Oh, thank you. That's a book I'm very proud of. In case you need to learn how to program for a Turing machine, it's the book to get. Yeah.
Yep. Charles, where do people start up if they want to learn DirectX?
Wow, I don't know. There's most of the DirectX books I've seen. Virtually all the DirectX books I've seen are geared towards game developers. I am not a game developer myself. I am not a game player myself. I don't really know that whole universe. I would like to see DirectX used for more, less game-oriented, or, you know, in addition to games, other stuff in the on the UI. But I mean, the books on DirectX are huge, and they're called Introduction to DirectX for Game Programmers, and it's huge, you know. And yep. it's necessarily huge, because it is the nature of DirectX that you need a lot of code to do something very easy. It's very simple. To show a rotating cube, you need a lot of code. As opposed to WPF 3D, where you could do the entire thing in XAML in markup.
Yep.
I don't know. It'd be fun to write a book on DirectX. I don't know if it's going to happen, but it'd be fun. It'd be fun. It'd be a challenge.
Hopefully, by the time you're done, your editor has tweeted it for you. So, do you do unit testing or test-driven development?
No, I in a consulting job, I was made to do that, but not for the little tiny programs I write for the book. No.
Okay.
I sometimes write some extra code that I'll make sure that things are working okay. I do a lot of right into the output window in my programs, which is it's not the most advanced way of doing debugging, but sometimes it's real helpful when there's a lot of several different methods being called and to see the order of things happening and just get a list of strings in the output window. Yes, some of us still do that.
Yep. This is an open question that I liked. What thoughts does Charles have on interesting future application areas for Windows 8 Touch in particular?
Wow.
Anything cool that you're working on?
That I'm working on. I wish I knew what would be the killer app of the year 2015. I'd be working on that. I have no idea. I'm not a good forecaster. I have been having much fun with this column in MSDN Magazine. I did a program called DJ, where you load in one of your music files and it displays a record, and you can turn it with your fingers backwards and forwards like a DJ. And in the July issue, I'm going to have kind of a simulation of a mini Moog, basically a little analog type synthesizer done entirely in X-Audio 2 that I had a lot of fun with. And I'm looking forward to seeing what I can do with touch and DirectX graphics. I'm tossing around some ideas. I hope to have some fun with that towards the later part of this year.
Here's a question that I'm curious to hear your answers. Or I know your answer, but do you really have that Windows tattoo, Charles?
Yes. Yes, it was. When did I get that thing? It must have been. I don't know.
Are you going to update it for Windows?
I don't think so. You know. It was. Here's the thing. I had always thought that if I were a novelist, if I were writing novels, that every time I published a novel, I'd get a tattoo that symbolized the novel, you know. So, and I realized that I had written this book called Programming Windows, which I guess by the time I got the tattoo, it had been around for about 10 years. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to write a novel, but this book has been around for 10 years, so I got a Windows logo tattoo. It's not something I'm particularly proud of. It's you know, if you're outside and you know it's exposed, it doesn't really perform the function that a tattoo should perform. I was told by bikers that tattoos were, in their words, let's use their words, but that it tends to draw nerds, let's say that, as a Windows tattoo.
You don't need to draw nerds.
No, it's I don't need nerds following me around. That's not cool. So. But, you know, if I weren't wearing a long sleeve shirt and a jacket.
Yeah, I've seen the picture, so it's in your blog. It looks
people
pretty real.
Some people think it was fake, though.
Okay. So the tattoo is real, and hopefully nobody at Microsoft is going to come and tell you that logo is out of date.
Yeah, it is. It's very much out of date.
So, great. There's another question here. So with DirectX and your interaction between DirectX and Windows, like in Windows runtime, SAML plus DirectX.
Yeah, there is basically three ways you can put DirectX in your Windows 8 app. And one of them is that you have just a window with no XAML, no XAML-based controls, nothing. It's a DirectX surface. You do everything you want on it. Because it's a window object, you can get all touch input, you can get keyboard input, you can get all the user input stuff, but you're not dealing with any XAML or any XAML-based controls. So that's one way to do it. That's an approach for a hardcore game where the game just does all its graphics on its own, all its graphics and touch input. The second way is that you can have a DirectX surface at the back of your app and then overlay XAML graphics on top of that. And this is, to me, the more interesting approach, because you can get all the DirectX graphics that you want, but then you can bring up an app bar right there, or you can bring up a pop-up and use it for a dialog box, or you can have a couple buttons in there, and so that's an interesting way to integrate the two. The third way is that you can have basically a XAML app, but then you can have a DirectX bitmap that you use as a XAML type bitmap, which means it can be an image brush and it can be an image object, but you can draw on it using DirectX graphics. So you could have a control where the visuals of the control are 3D.
Yep.
And that's, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of power in the three choices. There's for everybody, there's a little bit of a way to escape and get really great performance, which is one of the things that we lacked in WPF 3D.
And they said that right at the outset. You know, this is not for game programming. You know, it's not for physics simulations. This is for getting some 3D in your app, and we knew those limitations at the outset.
Yep. Is there a generic method to connect to any social network like Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, in WinRT? So we do have a web auth broker.
Yeah.
So we have a web auth broker that you can use for the OAuth against any of these services. But we don't have a generic API that will connect to Facebook, Twitter. One thing that we do have is shared contracts.
Yeah.
And so if you write your app and you implement the contract in Windows and they have a Facebook or Twitter application installed, that will allow you to share data. And then that application will implement their shared contract and post it for you on Twitter or Facebook. So it's not one single API, but we make it a little bit easier than we've done for other platforms. So, BV.net, Charles. You haven't mentioned it. Somebody's asking, what do I tell my fellow programmers that are doing BV.net since you didn't mention it?
It's whenever we say C sharp and XAML, we're really saying C sharp and VB and XAML. VB you can do use just as well as C sharp, and at this point they share a lot of more similarities than they used to, and you're basically generating the same managed code. So,
are we going to get the samples on VB.NET? I'm kidding. I could see you were like, oh, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I did. I converted my. What book was that? I guess it was the WinForms book to VB. And it was a lot of work. And
what, you know, there's lots of tools that do it. So it's intermediate language on both. You can go and compile on one and decompile on the other. So on that side, I don't think that would be, you know, a really great use of your time. I think we're better off you writing DirectX articles or blog posts
Thank
or everything
you.
Else. So,
thank you.
So great. We're out about time. We're about out of time. Is there anything else that you want to close on? Anything you want to talk about with your book?
Well, I'm having a lot of fun writing Windows 8 apps and exploring the different types of apps I can write and the different languages I hope people share in that fun.
Yep. And I do want to do a call out on the book. So it's the sixth edition. And one thing that I learned today, we were joking about it, and I said I was probably one of your first readers. And so you've released it in parts because it's all free download. And you released it in parts. And one of the things
it wasn't a free. It was a low cost download at the beginning.
Oh,
wow. It was never a free download.
Okay, so
you're gonna have to pay for the book. What can I say?
Yep, but that's worth it.
But some of the money goes to me to help feed me. And
yep. So it's definitely worth it. The one thing that I want to highlight is that as you released it in milestones, it kind of evolved a little bit. So if you read it a year ago, like I did, because we were talking about chapters, and you were saying, "Oh, I rewrote a little bit, or I tweaked that as I went." So make sure that you go get the latest.
And the API changed as well. Yeah.
And re-download the samples because I had the samples from before you updated them. So I just want to call out on, hey, make sure you have the latest version of the book. Make sure you have all the samples because there's really great stuff in there. And if you're a C++ developer, now you can find them in C++ too, which I didn't know. So, well, thank you very much for joining us,
Thank
Charles.
You. It's been a pleasure.
Yep.